te vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Brahmana uvacha. Dharatyaye dhan vajaya neveshito. Rajastamas sattva vibhakta karma drik. Sa esha sartor ta parak pari brahman. Bhavavat. Bhavata vim yati na sharma vindati. Brahmana uvacha. Saratya yedvan yajaya niveshato. Rajastamak sattva vibhakta karma drik. Sa esha sartor ta parak pari brahman. Bhavata vim yati na sharma vindati.
Rajastama sattva vibhakta karma drik. Yajastamasa Vavibhakti Kamadri
Saesha
Sarta Tapara Pari Brahma Saesha Sarta Tapara Pari Brahma
I'm going to skip the word for word and go back to the chapter summary. So, further talks between King Rahugana and Jadbhart, chapter 13, canto 5. The Brahmana, Jadbharata, became very kind to King Rahugana, and to disassociate him from the material world, he spoke figuratively of the forest of the material world. He explained that this material world is like a great forest in which one becomes entangled due to association with material life. In this forest, there are plunderers, the six senses, as well as carnivorous animals like jackals, wolves, and lions, parentheses, wife, children, and other relatives, who are always anxious to suck the blood from the head of the family. The forest plunderers and the carnivorous blood-sucking animals combine to exploit the energy of a man within this material world. In the forest, there is also a black hole covered by grass into which one may fall. Coming into the forest and being captivated by so many material attractions, one identifies himself with this material world, society, friendship, love, and family, having lost the path, and not knowing where to go, being harassed by animals and birds, one is victimized by many desires. Thus, one works very hard within the forest and wanders here and there. He becomes captivated by temporary happiness and becomes aggrieved by so-called distress. Actually, one simply suffers in the forest from so-called happiness and distress. Sometimes he is attacked by a snake, parentheses, deep sleep, and due to the snake bite, he loses consciousness and becomes puzzled and bewildered about his discharging duties. But discharging his duties. Sometimes he is attracted by women other than his wife. And thus he thinks he enjoys extramarital love with another woman. He is attacked by various diseases, by lamentation, and by summer and winter. Thus, one within the forest of the material world suffers the pains of material existence. Expecting to become happy, the living entity changes its position from one place to another. But actually, a materialistic person within the material world is never happy. Being constantly engaged in materialist activities, he is always disturbed. He forgets that one day he has to die, although he suffers severely, being illusioned by the material energy. He still hankers after material happiness. In this way, he completely forgets his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paragraph. By hearing this from Jadbharat, Maharaj Rahugana received his Krishna consciousness and thus benefited from Jadbharat's association. He could understand that his illusion was over. He begged pardon from Jadbharat for his misbehavior. All this was told to Maharaj Parikshit by Shukadeva Goswami. That's the chapter summary. So, I'm going to skip the word for word and go right to the translation and purport. Jadbharata, who had fully realized Brahman, continued, "My dear King Rahugana, the living entity wanders on the path of the material world, which is very difficult for him to traverse, and he accepts repeated birth and death. being captivated by the material world under the influence of the three modes of material nature, the living entity can see only the three fruits of activities under the spell of material nature. These fruits are auspicious, inauspicious, and mixed. He thus becomes attached to religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the monistic theory of liberation, merging with the Supreme. He works very hard day and night, exactly like a merchant who enters a forest to acquire some articles to sell later for profit. However, he cannot really achieve happiness within this material world. Purport. One can very easily understand how difficult and insurmountable the path of sense gratification is, not knowing what the path of sense gratification is when it becomes implicated in the repetition of birth and death. And accepts different types of bodies again and again. Thus, one suffers in material existence. In this life, one may think that he is very happy being an American, Indian, Englishman, or German, but in the next life, one has to accept another body among the 8,400,000 species. The next body has to be immediately accepted according to karma. One will be forced to accept a certain type of body, and protesting will not help. That is the stringent law of nature. Due to the living entity's ignorance of his eternal blissful life, he becomes attracted to material activities under the spell of Maya. In this world, he can never experience happiness. He works very hard to do so. This is called Maya. End of purport. It's a long chapter. Material existence chapter. There are several sections of the Bhagavatam that repeat the same theme, the forest of material enjoyment and so on. There are two sections that come to mind, at least, in the Bhagavatam that are explicitly metaphorical, and that's the discussion between Narada Muni and King Prajñāvari, where he describes his fictitious person, King Paranjana, in order to help the bewildered king, materially attracted king, come out of his material attraction. So he uses this metaphor of a king who is actually him. And it's like outlining the Sankhya philosophy and so many other things, the implication of material existence. Then he goes on in the whole next section and describes or explains the metaphor. And here is also, Prabhupada is announcing in the summary chapter of the chapter, it's allegorical or metaphorical. And the forest of material enjoyment. So it's to help this bewildered King Rahugana to get it, to get, you know, the foolishness, the misfortune of his situation. So it's metaphorical deliberately, or allegorical deliberately. Other than that, critics of the Bhagavatam think the whole thing is metaphorical or fairy tale or mythology, because there, and their reason is that there are statements that are just beyond the comprehension of worldly minded people. You know, Krishna's lifting a hill when he's 6 years old with the little finger of his left hand. Of course it's fairy tale, because we can't do that, so Krishna can't do that. So, fairy tale. mythology. And then comes the interpretation. So this means that. Just making this comment that there are at least these two sections, there may be more that don't come to mind, that are explicitly metaphorical, and it's fine to understand them that way, and they're the exception. And the rule is, everything in the Bhagavatam is literal. The size of Mount Meru, and the whole thing. Structure of the universe, the lifetime of demigods, the flying of the siddhas here and there without any airplane, and so on and so on. They're just, they're capacities that we don't know about, and they're not mythological. So that's that point. Now, the length of this verse is quite normal, but how Prabhupada has dealt with the translation and the synonyms, it's quite long. It's not so dissimilar from what he has stated previously about, I became Jad Bharat, became detached from worldly activity and the association of worldly people. He's already stated it. Now he's giving, going more deeply into why. Besides, he blew it in his previous lifetime, or two lifetimes ago, and he doesn't want to make the same mistake. Here's the mistake for those that are mistaken. It's the anatomy of Maya, I guess. And Maya means that which is not. So mistakenly accepting that which is not to be what is, that's Maya. So mistakenly thinking that there's happiness where there's no happiness, that's Maya. It's the influence of the illusory potency. Even when it's suffering, one is searching for happiness and taking momentary, there's something that keeps the materialist going. That's the sense and the sense object meet, and there's some sensation that says happiness. That's what keeps everybody going. The tongue and the ear and the eye and touch and smell and the mind. Reading that information. There's something going on the platform of the sense and sense object that keeps everybody going. And it's illusory happiness, Maya Sukha. Sukha means happiness, false happiness, because for a variety of reasons, that's this whole chapter, it's temporary. Even if there is some sensation, wait a while, sensation is gone, and then the attraction for that sensation keeps one going, and you'll go further into darkness. And that darkness means forgetfulness of who you are, forgetfulness of your really real happiness, and bondage to the cycle of birth and death, more of the same. It's happiness that's insubstantial. Right in the beginning of the first canto of Bhagavatam, Prabhupada makes this, uses Latin words to understand that which is illusory, limited and temporary, and that which is substantial. So, sat. We've been discussing this word a little bit. Sat means exists. And then there's asat, that it doesn't exist. Happiness that doesn't exist. Or we don't say, for example, we don't say the table doesn't exist, but it's temporary. Therefore, it's category That's the language that Prabhupada uses. There's substance and there's category. Substance uses the example of reflection of an object. The reflection of an object looks just like the object, so assuming that the mirror is not curved or wacky. If it's a normal mirror, then the object, the reflection of the object, looks just like the object. But there's no substance. It's category. Looks like. So in this world, it's the world of category. The world of chairs and pots and plates and things. But there's no substance. There's no sat. It's insubstantial. So whatever it is that one experiences, it's asat. It's a reflection of the reality. Like, you know, love. Bhakti Siddhanta's strong expression. There's no love in the material world. Oh, I beg your pardon. I love my wife and I love my dog and I love my friend. It's a reflection of the real thing. There is love, and there's love in the spiritual realm, but in this realm, in the realm of mirrors, of reflections, there's no substance. There's feelings, and people are feeling, and they, you know, sing about it, and they act on it, and they do all kinds of things. But it's insubstantial. It's not the real thing. It looks like the real thing. People accept it to be the real thing. And when they hear that there's a real thing, they say, no, it's mythology. Because they don't know. Because ignorance covers the real knowledge of the living entity. Mayaya aparita jnana. Because asuram bhavam ashritam, because of the accepted the asura bhav, that, you know, the denial. And even if there's acceptance of the existence of God, besides denying the existence of God, still it largely, certainly there's exception, but there's embrace of the illusory image of whatever. Of happiness, of love, of family. Now, how do we, you know, Vaishnavas navigate this territory? We, you know, we have marriages and have children and educate children, and, you know, we have a job and we go to school. And we do all these things. And the message, a metaphor, is using the thorn to remove a thorn. Because the thorn causes pain, so to remove the thorn, you use the thorn to remove, you can use the thorn to remove the thorn. So we use these things in Krishna's service because it's part of Krishna's energy. So this whole chapter is where one doesn't recognize it's Krishna's energy and thus meant for his enjoyment. But material enjoyment is this asura bhav, the mood of the denial of the existence of God. And we need to move beyond that, not only to the acceptance of the existence of God, but this kingdom of God is meant for his enjoyment. Not the kingdom of God is meant for our enjoyment. I had this little disagreement with Mom and Dad one day where they said, why are you a vegetarian? I said, because it's described in our Vedic literature that we offer our food first to Krishna, and we don't offer those things to Krishna. He said, well, how come? Because God gave dominion to man over animals. It's right in Genesis. So, dominion. And my reply was, well, when I was little, you had dominion over me. And it didn't become your meal. So, having dominion doesn't mean exploitation. It's just the opposite. Having dominion means give protection. Dominion. But in material consciousness, it's, you know, it's now, it's for yours to enjoy. That was the argument. And they, you know, they were religious people, mom and dad. But, you know, terribly misguided. Covered with ignorance. I mean, you know, pious ignorance. It's in this world. And, you know, as devotees, we can also be like that. You know, accept but not really accept. And think it's okay because, you know, and it's certainly externally accepting the existence of God and trying to live a godly life, although it's sinful. It's better than atheistic life where one is just sinful. There's, you know, little light. But so as devotees, we need to practice. So this king, Rahugana, mentioned this several times, Jad Bharat saw something inside this man, because otherwise he didn't speak to anybody about anything his whole life. Now he's giving this whole long dissertation on transcendental knowledge. He sees something inside the king, and he's fanning the spark, and like very expertly, and the king is receptive. He doesn't understand everything. So, like this previous chapter at the beginning, he says, could you explain it again? I didn't get it. So he explains it again. The transcendental knowledge. He's in full knowledge of Brahman. Now he's giving this anatomy of Maya. And the king is getting it because there's a capacity to hear. And Jad Bharat has the capacity to give. So similarly, for us, the capacity to hear is very important. And it's not just that as long as it fits my worldview, it's fine. And if there's contradiction to my worldview, well, I'll think about it. So go on hearing. And those things that you can hear and can understand, apply them, and then go on hearing. So gradual, by hearing process, gradual, in one sense, cleansing of the contamination, and thus knowledge awakening. But in and of itself, it's knowledge. And it illumines just by that process of hearing. So it's an intense chapter. We'll go through a little bit some of the words because it's really long the way Prabhupada has translated it. This Rajas Tama, the second line. Rajas Tama Sattva Vibhakta Karma Drik. So we know what those three modes are. And Prabhupada's word for word, a conditioned soul who sees only immediately beneficial fruitive activities and their results, which are divided into three groups by the modes of nature. So that's Maya. That's all you can see is fruitive activities and the results. And even seeing that, there's knowledge in the lower modes of nature, and you see it wrong. You know, that which is misery is happiness. That which is not to be done is to be done. and so forth. Ignorance. And that which is bitter is sweet. One of the classic examples Prabhupada gives is smoking cigarettes. People do it anyway. You know, it'll kill them and it stinks. Just being in a room where people are smoking, your clothes start to stink. And how do you acquire a taste for something that makes you cough? Or alcohol. You know, it's awful. Anyway. But then people become addicted. Modes of nature. That was just misery. I can't do without it. The first time I was visiting in China, just a little story. The city of arrival was Beijing, and I was traveling with somebody. Somebody met me at the airport in Shanghai, and then we were walking because, you know, to go to a taxi. And the man in front of us waiting for the taxi was such so addicted to nicotine, he lit up two cigarettes and was smoking one with one hand and smoking the other with the other hand. Wow. I can't kill myself fast enough. My father was a nice man, but he died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes. You know, pious, unfortunate death due to this bad habit. So, it's a dark place. So the metaphor of a forest is appropriate. And so let's go through the word for word again. Advani. Duratyaye Advani. Prabhupada has translated this Advani as on the path of fruitive activities. Parentheses. Performing actions in this life, creating a body in the next life by those actions, and in this way, continuously accepting birth and death. Now, devotees understand that, but people that aren't devotees, they don't understand that. They're just one thing, you know, because it's this other, rajastamaksattva vibhakta karma drik, you know, calculating your happiness based on the modes of nature that are driving their illusory sense of happiness. And that's all they can think of, and they can't think of, I'm creating another body. According to the modes of nature and karma. That's the forest. And then within the forest, there's all these, you know, things. Sa, artha, third line. Sa, artha. The living entity falsely seeking sense gratification. Artha para. Money. Paribrahman. Wandering all over. Bhava atavim. Last line. Bhava. Very different than bhava. Bhava means material existence. Bhava rog. Bhava atavim. The forest known as bhava, which means repetition of birth and death. So, entering into this forest of enjoyment, expecting enjoyment, and there's no enjoyment. There's senses and sense objects meeting, That's supposed to be enjoyment, but that's not what real happiness is. It's the category, there's not substance. We want happiness, we want love, we want the real thing, but we don't want the real thing enough. We like, because we're, you know, although it's an allegory or a metaphor, the king understands it's meant for him. He's in this position. Same as Paranjana, later he gets it. The allegory is him. And so, you know, we're not so different. At least, you know, wandering and wandering and wandering and in material existence, who knows how many lifetimes and who knows how many more lifetimes. Until we get it. And then when we get it, it's we act according to the transcendental position, not somewhat. Because if it's only somewhat and somewhat not, more birth and death. Same, we're creating bodies just by our choices. So it's a whole chapter of illusory happiness and the consequences. Any discussion? Pretty sobering, huh? Yeah.
Hi Krishna.
Got it. Go ahead.
So this translation talks about you know, the general people, the non generally the people, how they get entangled.
Materialistic people. Yeah.
So as a devotee, we understand all these things. What is our ultimate goal and what is the path that we should follow. And so we also, since we have this body, so we also do the activities.
Yes.
But our conscience is the different, like, you know, for the pleasure of Krishna.
Yes.
So we also do the same kind of the, whether it is us, I mean, we don't do inauspicious, but the mixed sometimes have to do.
Yeah.
But since our conscience is the ultimate, focused on the ultimate goal, so we are on the right path.
I'm confirming your understanding.
Sure, thanks,
Maharaj. There's two things. Attachment to the goal, at least pursuit of the goal, and detachment from the temporary, although you're doing it. Because it's purification, and it's something that, in a purified state of consciousness, I can offer to Krishna. And I'm not yet in a purified state of consciousness, so I have to do it in this mixed consciousness. But it's I'm making the offering to Krishna. At least, you know, striving in that direction. And doing the regulated activities that further purify consciousness and senses.
There is a feedback from last class.
From which?
From last evening class of the people...
In the audience. Okay.
So, this is like not one person, like 5-6 people, they are like practicing, they are not like, you know, doing some chantings. And so everybody was expressed the same thing, like it was the best evening, the classes was...
It was a bit what?
Best class yesterday evening. So two people said that. And one devotee also said that I really focused today's class more than it was very nicely. I understood the subject, the matter, whatever you discussed. And one said best evening. So they didn't say that like a formal way of like, you know, just to say something, but they said it from their heart. So I felt also very nice somewhere. So I thought like I should express that feedback to you.
Well, I want to discuss the topic, and when I looked at the audience last night, I wasn't sure if I should, because there were some newer people.
But they said that, Maharaj, like that.
So what I'm thinking tonight is not do part two of from yesterday evening, because there's some newer people. And you'll go back to Lord Brahma's prayers part two, because that's something. I asked Dr. Ashok and his wife when I spoke on that topic, was it appropriate for the audience? Because they're like their circle of friends. Not so much, sadhakas, but just their circle of friends. And they said it was good. Anyway, it's hard to gauge what audience is going to relate to. Because many times it's like,
so the one point was, they said like it was totally nice summary that it was easy for us to understand all that. So they expressed that also.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Oh, no, I was just scratching. Oh, sorry.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You gave an example of using thorn for removing thorn.
Yeah.
Is that same thing as Yukta Vairagya?
Yeah, similar. Almost the same.
Okay. So, I think that using the thorn has to be very carefully selected what kind of thorn is going to remove the thorn.
That's right.
Yeah. Otherwise it could be dangerous. It could hurt more than
the thorn. Yeah.
The thorn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is the general guideline from you? I know time to time you give details, but
general guideline in thorn selection or well, I would say a general guideline is know your limits, meaning if I go into such and such circumstance in order to purify myself and give Krishna consciousness to others, it may be I'll become contaminated and lose my Krishna consciousness as a result. Here's two examples. One example is there was this royal family in Iran, if I'm not mistaken, during Prabhupada's time, and when sannyasi went to stay with the royal family because they were favorable to Krishna consciousness, and he fell into Maya. He just stopped Krishna consciousness and became, influenced by the, royal life in the royal family. I forget his name. Just like disappeared. So, there's another example, but we should know our capacity. If we're going to engage something in Krishna's service, don't have it work the other way. If it's something that's engaging you in Maya's service, you know your capacity. And be careful. Be careful either way. Don't go and preach. There's a risk. Go and preach. There's a risk. You'd know what your capacity of risk taking is. But it's not like I just, stay in four walls and I'm not going to be safe because I didn't take any risk. That's risky too. They're not getting purification, not getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy. But we have to know our capacity. It's a general guideline in the Yukta Vairagya principle. Okay, Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.